Today, slow, slow, down, down, slow. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the Property Imperative Weekly to the 14th of July, 2018. Our digest of the latest finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And by the way, if you value the content we produce, please do consider joining our Patreon programme, where you can support our ability to continue to make great content. And here is the link. My interview with John Adams on the $1 trillion of foreign debt that Australia is saddled with was well received this week. And here is the link. With considerable interest, not only from audiences in Australia, but also in the US. Now, it's worth noting that global debt of all types stand at a record US$237 trillion. And by the way, the non-financial debt as a share of GDP in the US is also at a record 46%. We are drowning in debt. The discussion around how companies are borrowing more to boost shareholder returns in the short term and the risks ahead resonated with many who watched our discussion. And our next discussion will focus on the apparently simple question of what is money? So watch out for that. We also covered household finance and mortgage stress this week on a range of mainstream media outlets, including the ABC and Seven Sunrise, as more banks, including Macquarie, Bendigo and AMP Bank, all lifted their mortgage rates in the week between 8 and 17 basis points, depending on the bank loan type, because of ongoing funding pressures. We've been talking about this, as you know, for a number of weeks. My headline of 1 million households in stress by September, if the majors follow suit, received significant attention, despite some analysts choosing to say that there is no issue at all because rates are so low, or confusing stress with debt. Clearly, the education must continue. And to which I reply, look at the data. One third of owner-occupied households have no wriggle room to accommodate rising rates. Even small increases, 10 basis points on an average $750,000 Sydney mortgage, is another $60 each and every month. Given rising costs and flat incomes, this is significant. It's also worth noting that CBA this week dropped the base rate on its NetBank Saver account by 30 basis points. Westpac did the same last week on its eSaver product, and by the same amount. Three of the majors, CBA, Westpac and ANZ, have all now reduced their annual rates, so depositors are also getting hard hit. And this will make banking funding costs in the capital markets go even higher as savers look for alternatives and withdraw funds from bank deposit accounts. APRA reported the outcomes of their bank stress tests and said everything was fine, but our own analysis of the data using the same high-risk scenario came out with a much more worrisome result. You can watch our video, When is a Test Not a Test, for more. According to the Australian, CLSA analyst Brian Johnson said that it was a bit late for the regulators to acknowledge housing as a potential systemic risk after it watched from the sidelines as household debt exploded and house prices reached bubble territory. He also said Mr. Byers' speech was indicative of an accommodative stance that would let the banks continue to lend largely unrestrained, more evidence of the ongoing debt balloon. The outgoing Secretary of the Australian Treasury, John Fraser, warned in a speech at the Economist Forum, published by the Treasury, against lifting interest rates, saying considerable care needed to be taken to unwind the extreme fiscal and monetary policy interventions of the past decade. As we all know, these interventions, he said, have left fiscal and monetary policymakers with difficult legacies, structural balance deficiencies, and high net debt levels, and official interest rates at historically very low levels. Judgment is required, he said, together with a healthy scepticism about what economic models alone might be telling us. My own view is that we see more and more evidence of the politicization of the Treasury, as reflected in their unrealistically optimistic forecast. The latest edition of NAB's quarterly property industry survey contained data that showed that demand for property from foreign buyers has fallen to levels not seen since 2010. This is true of both new and existing properties, and is a result of tighter credit controls and higher transaction fees. Another reason why we think property prices will continue to fall. And data from New South Wales shows again the significant drop in the number of foreign buyers transacting at the moment. CoreLogic's home price indices continues to record weekly falls, with no state rising and Melbourne falling 0.2% on the prior week, followed by Sydney and Perth both down 0.1%. Auction clearance rates have remained relatively consistent over the past 2 months, remaining within the low to mid 50% range. Volumes have been trending lower over each of the last 4 weeks and is also tracking lower relative to volumes from the same period last year. CoreLogic says Melbourne's final auction clearance rate fell to 56.1% across 631 auctions last week, down from 57.2% across the higher 791 auctions over the previous week. And over the same week last year, 818 homes went to auction with a clearance rate of 72.9%. Sydney's final clearance rate has been fairly stable over the last 3 weeks, with last week's final clearance rate coming in at 50.1% across 552 auctions. And that's compared with 49.7% across 634 auctions the prior week. This time last year, 656 homes went under the hammer, returning a clearance rate of 68.6%. Now, there is noise in the data here because of the high number of unreported auctions. So, in fact, the true situation is considerably worse. And we discuss this at length in our video, Auction Results Under the Microscope. And here is the link. The AFR reported that at the end of May, the average days on market in Sydney for houses has risen to 63 days, up from about 45 days at the peak of the market last year. Days on market have been hovering around the 60s since March, but for units, that number is now 64 days, rising from last year's peak of 54 days. And it takes an average of 48 days to sell a home privately, rather than through an auction. That number has remained fairly stable in 2017 and 2018 so far. For units, the average days on market in Melbourne has improved to 75 days, down from nearly 100 days last year. Now, there was significant discussion from the analysts this week, with Morgan Stanley's forward-looking house model, the MSHA US, at a new historic low at -1.0 in the June quarter. Their model includes consideration of construction, credit availability, and other factors, including the Royal Commission. They conclude national and Sydney dwelling prices are down by -2.3% and 4.8% from their peak, respectively, and auction clearance rates are tracking around 50%. As a result, consensus has turned negative on the market, but the debate now pivots on the extent of any decline. At this stage, they say, we remain of the view that a price adjustment would be closer to 10%, while noting that deeper falls would bring a monetary or prudential policy adjustment into the debate. Credit has tightened further, sentiment is slipping, and additional stock is hitting the market, said Morgan Stanley strategist Daniel Blake and Chris Nicol. Deloitte released its Australian Mortgage Report 2018, which forecasts that Australia's housing correction will continue on the back of falling mortgage volumes. They say Australia's leading lenders and mortgage brokers predict the nation's housing settlement volumes will either remain flat or more likely decrease by up to 5% from the highs of the previous years. They said it's already appearing as if 2018 will be the second consecutive year since 2012 that settlement volumes, that is, the level of new mortgages issued in the market, either flattened off or reduces. Deloitte Access Economics Director Michael Thomas said regulators aiming to restrain increasing property debt amid concerns of an overheating market have targeted investor lending. Tighter lending standards and restrictions on the volume of interest-only loans to total new residential mortgages have pushed up rates for investors. And market activity has begun cooling, with home price growth slowing in the latter half of 2017 and continuing into 2018. The ANZ Property Council survey for the September 2018 quarter shows that sentiment in Australia's property sector worsened from last quarter's record peak. The fall occurred across most states and territories, they said, with only Queensland and South Australia recording mild increases. The latter has continued its impressive run and is now the country's most optimistic region. The fall in sentiment is entirely due, they say, to the residential segment. In a sharp reversal from the stabilisation of previous quarters, the outlook for capital values in residential property has deteriorated markedly. Staffing levels, construction activity, and the forward work schedule are all expected to ease in the residential space. Importantly, survey respondents expect the availability of debt finance to worsen. They said, "We believe this has been the main driver of the current weakness in the housing market. Any further tightening of credit will put more pressure on the industry." So this is all about credit tightening. Now, Chief Executive of Aussie Home Loans, James Simon, said that after banks have tightened credit standards dramatically in the last year, more customers Aussie are dealing with are falling outside the lending policies of banks, which have ramped up their scrutiny of customers' living expenses. He said, "I'm hoping everyone is looking at this very, very carefully, because I'm seeing a credit marketplace tightening a lot, a real lot. And if we see tightening anymore, I think you mightn't get the desired outcome you want," he said in an interview with Fairfax Media. But CBA announced further expense checks on mortgage applicants, with two rounds of detailed quizzing about their weekly spending on everything from school fees to gym memberships, children and pets. The formal categories cover children, pets, clothing and personal care, communication, education, food and groceries, housing and property expenses, insurance, medical, health and fitness, recreation, travel and entertainment, and transport and auto. Now, I doubt most households would have a clue, bearing in mind that according to our surveys, half maintain no formal household budget. So many will take a guess and carry the liability for so doing. Further evidence of credit tightening and, importantly, risk transference to the borrower. Because once you sign the expenses declaration, the bank is insulated from not unsuitable liability. Hash Ching also said this week that lending regulation has gone overboard and the tightening restrictions have at times become the reason for the unnecessary disapproval of loan applications. And yet, the credit data from the ABS this week showed that there was still some credit growth, despite investors falling off a cliff, especially in Sydney and Melbourne. The ABS data showed that total lending stock grew again in May. Now, this is original data split between owner-occupied and investor loans. Total housing stock rose 0.5% in the month to $1.66 trillion. Within that, owner-occupied lending rose 0.5% to $1.1 trillion, and investment lending rose just 0.1% to $563 billion. Investment loans fell to be 33.8% of all loans, and overall growth is circa 6% annualised. As for whether growth at three times income is healthy, to quote Wayne Byers, well, that's another story. Remember, debt has to be repaid eventually. Growth has been strongest in the owner-occupied lending sector, but investment lending is also higher. And if anything, further tightening is in order. Now turning to the markets. Bank stocks did quite well this week, with the ASX 100 up to 5,155, despite the latest round in the trade wars. CBA went up to 74.85 and Westpac ended at 29.60, but above the recent lows and a little lower on Friday. Clearly, concerns about their mortgage books are not translating to share prices at the moment. And the Aussie dollar was a little stronger, although the drift down from the start of the year has continued and many think it will go a lot further. On the US markets, Wall Street ended the week higher, with all the major indices closing in the green. The Dow ended at 25,019, still below the February highs. Tech stocks were the winners for the week. The tech-heavy Nasdaq finished up more than 1%. And among the big winners in tech land was Amazon. The stock got a boost on a price target raise by Comacord to $2,000 from $1,800 a share on Thursday. And again, when SG Cohen raised its price target on the stock to $2,100 from $2,000 on Friday. Alphabet's Google, Apple and Facebook all closed up for the week, but Netflix ended in the red, hurt by a Friday sell-off ahead of their results. There were a few jitters about what numbers Netflix would have to report and what level would be required to spur more buying, with the stock up around 100% year to date. The top 20 internet leaders highlight the concentration in a small number of the stocks, with Amazon and Alphabet right at the top. Inflation data was paramount during the week, especially after last Friday's employment report gave mixed signals of strong continued job creation but weaker than expected wage growth. The numbers grabbing the headlines were the levels in wholesale and retail inflation not seen for a while. The producer price index, the PPI, was up 3.4% in June year over year, and the highest level for 6.5 years. The June Consumer Price Index, the CPI, posted a year-over-year rise of 2.9%, the largest rise in 6 years. But the stock market tends to focus more on the month-on-month numbers, and these figures were mixed. CPI was in line with expectations month-over-month, while core CPI, which excludes volatile food and energy prices, was up less than expected. PPI and core PPI came in just a little hotter than expectations. So while prices are definitely rising, the US economy is so far avoiding the spikes that would fuel fears over interest rates rising more quickly. More significant for those zoned in on the Fed's rate hike path than the inflation data was the likely shift of Chicago Fed President Charles Evans. He made comments in a wide-ranging interview in the Wall Street Journal and said that the economy could handle a move to neutral rates. That was interpreted to mean he'd support 2 rate hikes this year. And there is currently more than an 80% chance of a rate hike in September and more than a 55% chance of one in December, according to one of the main indices. This would, of course, flow on to higher capital market funding costs, and the 3-month US bond rate was higher again on Friday. The bank earnings in the US were supposed to be the highlight of the week, but the mixed results from Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo failed to spur anything but a muted reaction from the market on Friday. Instead, Delta Airlines likely offered the most insight for investors. Shares climbed on Thursday after the airlines beat second quarter profit expectations, thanks to fare increases, but it also highlighted a jump in fuel costs of nearly 40% in the quarter, a $2 billion increase. And that's trouble for the airline sector as a whole, which is already struggling in 2018. The Dow Transports are off about 0.6% year to date, but there could be more weakness ahead if fuel costs remain high, and companies like FedEx and UPS are also likely to be hit by trade battles. Until earnings arrived in earnest on Friday, the summer low volume market has been especially susceptible to the vagaries of trade tensions. The week started off with more saber rattling between the US and its trade partners. The US released a list on Tuesday of $200 billion more of Chinese goods that would be assessed for tariffs of 10%. China again promised retaliation. That same day, ahead of his trip to Europe, President Donald Trump tweeted that the US loses $151 billion on trade with the EU, and that single bloc charges the US big tariffs and enacts trade barriers. But worries were reduced on Thursday when the Treasury Secretary said that there was a possibility that the US and China could restart trade talks. And the president, while hammering allies of NATO spending, has not made any remarks about specific trade action against Europe. The rosier outlook on trade was reflected in the performance of Boeing, which is particularly sensitive to trade battles given the amount of its overseas business. Boeing was one of the best Dow performers of the week. Oil prices fell for the week, but energy stock bulls will be heartened by crude oil's ability to stay above the $70 mark on Friday. Crude oil futures for August delivery settled at $71.01 per barrel, up 1% on the day. Oil did dip below $70 in the morning trading and rose steadily through the rest of the day and then was sold off late. For the week, mixed signals on supplies scaled back investor expectations for a global supply shortage as Libya resumed exports. And US supplies fell more than expected, while bets on a significant loss of Iranian crude were trimmed. Gold prices resumed their decline and remained on track for their lowest settlement in nearly 2 weeks, as easing trade war concerns offset the dollar's retreat against its rivals from a two-week high. The US dollar index, which measures the greenback strength against a trade-weighted basket of six major currencies, rose by 0.01% to 94.58, but well below its intraday high of $95. Dollar-denominated commodities such as gold are sensitive to moves in the dollar. A rise in the dollar market makes gold more expensive for holders of foreign currency, reducing demand for the precious metal. So amid all the market noise, the fragile US bank results and the prospect of higher interest rates ahead shine through as factors that could flow through into our own markets, which remain remarkably bullish despite the warning signs of more downside risk from the finance and property sectors locally. As I said to the AFR on Friday, I've never seen so much interest in offshore investors seeking ways to short our market, given the next move will likely to be lower as we move into spring. Expect further falls ahead. Before I sign off, mark your diary. On the 17th of July at 8 p.m. Sydney time, I'll be running our next live streaming session where you can discuss in real time the issues in play. Judging by the previous session, it will be a lively event. This time we'll be focusing on financial resilience. I've scheduled the event on our YouTube channel, but you can also send me questions beforehand via the comments section below. If you like what you've heard here today, please like the post and add a comment or question. And if you want to join the growing band of subscribers who receives alerts when we release new posts, do subscribe now. I'm Martin North, the Principal Analyst at Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again next time.